Testing.
Resting.
Zesting.
Zest tea from Paper Mario.
Taste tea from also Paper Mario.
Min tea, also from Paper Mario.
Toadsworth. He's in a lot of Mario
Hello,
games.
Hello, I'm Toadsworth. Princess. Now, princess. Don't touch that goop.
This old mushroom had a spore emission.
Oh, God. I was actually quoting the game, you know.
So was I. You never played that game?
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web.
The web. Computer today.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
Hello and welcome to Talk Surfer Show, a whirlwind ride through whatever we want. I am your host this week, Galen, and with me is, as always, my co-host,
Matthew.
And this week we have, just a couple of topics we wanted to talk about. Some of them are cool, some of them are...
Something other than cool. Warm? Some of them are hot.
Yeah.
I wouldn't speak too warmly about some of them, though. They run a real temperature range.
Yeah, maybe we should get on to the hottest topic right now.
Yes.
A certain meme we need to look at the state of.
Okay, so where do we even begin with Morbius?
So, okay. Morbius, I think where we begin is neither of us have seen it.
No, I've seen it.
Oh.
I haven't listened to it, though.
Okay, cool.
Because two streamers I watch, Jabroni Mike and Vinesauce Joel, did a riff track style commentary over it, but they did so without the audio being really audible at all. So, I've seen the movie, but I haven't heard the movie,
which is a
rare for me.
Well, I haven't seen it, but thankfully I don't think most of the internet has either, which is kind of the joke.
I know.
Morbius was a movie. I'm fairly certain it's supposed to be an extension of the, like, DC dark
DC?
Cinematic universe. Isn't it
it's
DC?
It's Marvel.
Oh, right, because Venom
is
Marvel.
It's a Sony Marvel.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, because, Venom was also Sony Marvel. Venom is a very good movie. The first one. I haven't seen the second one. So, it's supposed to be an extension of, like, the Sony Marvel, like, dark universe, essentially.
It's Sony being rude and wanting to keep all the Marvel licenses they already own to themselves. And, one of these happened to be Morbius.
And so they were like, we should make a Morbius movie. And no one saw it. But what did happen is people memed about it. I believe specifically there was a tweet on 4222 that was like, I love the part in Morbius when he said, I'm gonna morb, and then he morbed all over those guys. And that kind of started the trend of, like, talking about Morbius without ever having seen it, where it's like, oh, I love the part where he morbs into a new dimension, and like, he totally morbs his roommate.
Right,
you know?
Morb became a verb, and then it became just a word you could put into anything.
Because morb is an inherently funny word.
Mm-hmm. Also, there was the Morbius sweep. Do you remember that?
Yes!
A joke about how, like, Morbius is so good it should win every Oscar. Hashtag Morbius sweep.
Yeah. I don't know if it started with it, but I know that, like, Jared Leto had a picture of, like, him and a bunch of fans watching it, and he was like, out in the greatest number one movie in America, hashtag Morbius sweep, which didn't happen. But what did happen...
What did happen is Jared Leto was interviewed by Okayu from Hololive.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know about that?
I didn't know about
there
that.
There were Hololive interviews with Jared Leto and Robert Pattinson.
Oh, my God.
And Robert Pattinson did a much better job.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to watch one of these, and it's not the Jared Leto one.
Yeah.
No, what I was referring to was that Sony looked at all of this memes, and A, they greenlit Morbius 2, obviously. And then B, they put Morbius back into theaters thinking that the meme would, like, propel it into making a bit more money. It made $85,000.
It bombed again.
Yep, it's the only movie to have bombed twice.
Yeah,
that's probably not true, but...
It's so funny. It's... So, I was joking before this recording that Morbius gives me hope. And the reason is that I've seen people say, like, oh, but... What if the Morbin Time stuff was a plant from a Sony marketing person and they wanted it to be a meme? I'm like, well, then they failed. It's a very poor job of marketing. They didn't make any money off of the meme.
And
if anything, they made less money because people kept pirating it. There's the 20 Morb 7 streams on Twitch where people would make Twitch accounts just to stream Morbius. And then after the credits are done, they would take the stream down, as in Sony would take the stream down. They're like, all right, we'll let them watch it until the credits.
There's the old adage of, like, all publicity is good publicity. And, well, I think, like, in some instances that is true. I feel like that adage is, like, the kind of thing that... You know, your stupid marketing manager in the office who has a picture of fucking J.D. Rockefeller says, and then, like, proposes, like, what if we had a joke about avocado toast to get the millennials in? You know, like, it's not true, and this perfectly proves it, where it's like, It's company suits fundamentally not understanding that the meme is at their expense.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's like, and to be completely clear, I hate Morbius as a meme.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do not find...
It's gotten old very quickly.
Yeah. It had reverse Benjamin Button disease, where it's really, really old, really, really fast.
Yeah.
And I just... I don't like Morb as an insert for any other thing, but the like result of this is so incredibly funny that I would take 100 more Morbiuses over like that period in like 2015 where we had Ugandan Knuckles. You know?
My favorite actual usage of the Morbius meme is at Combo Breaker when people started calling Slayer's 2D in Guilty Gear the Morbius Sweep because he is a vampire and that is his God-given low button.
Oh, man.
That's the funniest part about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I also do love, there's a scene where Matt Smith is doing this, like, seductive dance. And there's a song in some other language, but in English it sounds like it's saying, have sex, poop your pants.
that sounds very fuck your life bing bong, which is a TikTok meme.
Mm-hmm.
It's
very dance on the O's.
So this has been your state of the Morb. Ah, shit, now we just did it.
Damn. Going off of that, we're going to talk about some other dumb shit. We have a trailer blazes.
Yeah, speaking of things that are going to bomb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so... It is near or currently the Jeff Keighley fun summer show time, Wahoo Yay, which is his replacement for E3 because E3 bombed so hard that they can't come back anymore.
E3 made $85,000 in theaters.
Yeah, really. Oh, I forgot there was a trailer for the Devolver conference this year.
Oh, okay.
That's not what we're talking about, though. Sort of near the start of that, there's been all these other sort of summer game release things from companies who are like, well, gamers like summer because they like news in summer, so we have to give them teasers in summer because then we can drive up hype. And Sega's been very keen on providing teasers for the new Sonic game, Sonic Frontiers. And it is not great. It is not looking great.
So unlike the other trailer blazes, the gameplay trailers they've shown have been like a combined total of like 13 minutes or something. So we're not going to do live reactions for this one. We've already seen
live it. Galen reaction.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've already seen it.
That's a good meme.
Yeah, no, live slug reaction is, let's pop back into State of the Meme real quick. Live slug reaction, goated meme. Going to be, like, one of the top 10 memes of the year. Anyway, so, Sonic Frontiers, what do we say about it?
Okay, so I should preface this by saying I used to be a big Sonic fan when I was younger. I feel like for every young boy, there's one of four things you're a fan of. It's cars, action movies, superheroes, I guess is an action movie, dinosaurs, and Sonic the Hedgehog. And I had the worst role.
You were that kid in high school who wore, like, a Zelda shirt and cargo pants.
Yes. Because you knew me in high school.
Yeah. And I mean that in a positive way. I mean that in the way of the tweet that's like, kids who wore this fit were never mean to me in high school.
Yeah. But so I am okay with a lot of the Sonic games people say are mediocre. I am a notorious Shadow the Hedgehog apologist, but because I think it's funny.
You're an average Shadow the Hedgehog enjoyer.
Yeah. I don't know if Sonic Frontiers looks so bad it's good. So people have been calling it like Sonic of the Wild because like the game is, it looks a lot like Breath of the Wild. There's these big towers you climb to reveal stuff. There's like these tiny puzzles everywhere that don't seem to do much. The world, it looks like Forge World from Halo Reach. Like it's very green with like blue rock walls and then some ocean. And there's just like a little bit of scenery and structures beyond the generic trees and rocks and water. One thing people have commented on about a lot is the flying rails. And it's not like Sonic is a series where that hasn't been a thing since the game rails were introduced, Sonic Adventure 2. But like, I do agree it's kind of excessive and it feels like they didn't really make an attempt to fit them into the surroundings.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that really sticks out to me is literally the first trailer, the first gameplay trailer. We see Sonic staring at a big, like, spire built out of stone. It looks very, I would honestly say it looks more like Shadow of the Colossus than Breath of the Wild. But, like, it looks not bad. And then you get closer and it's Sonic assets. Mm-hmm. It's like you had, it like, Forge is a really good comparison because it's like you had that big spire as like, you know, the base map asset, and then you just dotted around random Sonic barrels and jump pads and rails and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, like, you know, these are Sonic things, but it clashes so hard with like the seeming old dead civilization aesthetic that it really makes you wonder, like, why did they even try to marry these two?
Yeah, it's like, even in Sonic Adventure 2, they had a lot of levels that did try and sort of connect the rails to the scenery. Like City Escape, it was railings on steps, which was pretty cool and epic. A lot of levels had rails on the sides of platforms you could grind on, like Green Forest. So, like, it's not like they can't incorporate the rails into the scenery. But it looks so weird as well because, like, the way the draw distance looks. Because you can have the camera look around anywhere, whereas in a lot of these Boost-era games, the camera's very fixed, so they can selectively choose when and what to draw. It definitely has some pretty bad pop-in. But what really gets me is that it doesn't look or sound or feel like a Sonic game. Obviously, I don't know how it feels yet, but, like, its music is that melodramatic piano music that Breath of the Wild had and that all these other Breath of the Wild clones have, but that's not what Sonic is.
Yeah.
Literally from day one, Sonic has had like a rock-inspired soundtrack.
Speaking as someone who is not necessarily a Sonic fan, I don't hate the games. I don't love them. I didn't grow up with them. I can find some of them fun and also find some of them silly. It doesn't, it's trying to marry Sonic and Sonic-style gameplay with this, like, again, like you said, the old, like, the Breath of the Wild-style, like, old alien technology, old-looking, dilapidated world, and, like, that could work, but it doesn't how they've done it, because it looks like an Unreal 5 trailer.
Yeah.
It looks like, you know, it looks like a fan trailer that, like, you know, Sonic then hired the guy who did it, but then they made him make the game all on his own, and no one else.
It's Sega hire this man to its natural conclusion.
Yeah.
I you know, I've seen other, like, fan game teasers and tech demos where they had, like, a big open map, but it at least looked like Green Hill Zone, you know?
Yeah.
This one, it doesn't look like any Sonic game except Sonic 06, and that's definitely not the target. Though it feels a lot like Sonic 06 in other ways.
Yeah. Honestly, like, yeah, the you know, melodramatic music and stuff, and sort of, like, the attempts at cinematography feel very, like, you know, the most awkward parts of Sonic 06. And it just, it's so weird to me. It also, I'm sorry, it does not look like a world that's fun to get around in. Like, it feels like part of the design philosophy was like, well, because Sonic is fast, we don't have to necessarily make a lot of interesting areas. We just have to make, you know, little pods of areas that have interesting things, and then a bunch of open space. And that's not how you should do, like, that's not how you should do open world design. Even Breath of the Wild has a lot of those, like, really dumb downtime moments that don't feel interesting. And that's one of the worst parts about that game.
That's a big part of why I don't like open world games.
Yeah.
Is they're just like, oh, we just need to put some space between these. Let's literally just make a field.
Yeah.
Where, like, my favorite part of a lot of the older Sonic games when I was younger was just the way they looked.
Yeah.
A lot of my favorite levels were the ones that just had some, like, cool scenery or a cool structure in them. And you don't really see that in the trailer. There's nothing like Crazy Gadget that has those funny Tetris blocks at the end.
The enemies are also, I mean, they're enemies.
Yeah.
They don't look, it's not even that they don't look like they could be Sonic enemies. One of them kind of looks like nobodies, and one of them is a biblically accurate Miku. But, like, I would still buy that in, like, you know, like, retro-futurist zone in Sonic 36, you could have these as the enemies. But, like, they just don't look all that, like, engaging to take on.
Yeah, so the other trailer was a combat trailer. And the thing about the combat trailer was that, like, so it's like you homing attack an enemy, you kick them in the face, and then you do, like, a finisher move. But the finishers teleport Sonic backwards, and the camera, like, snaps to him, so it's super jarring. It looked like it teleports him. Maybe he bounced off, but it doesn't give a sense of that vision or that motion.
Yeah.
The combo moves kind of just look whatever. It reminds me a lot of Sonic Unleashed, which is, again, not a good target considering Werehog. I didn't think Werehog was awful, but, like, there's still a ton of room for improvement. What's kind of egregious is that there is a mechanic where you draw a circle with Sonic, and it creates, like, a tornado, but it doesn't, there's not a great, like, effect for the tornado, and drawing the circle doesn't seem to have a lot of weight to it when you finish. Compare that to Sonic Heroes, which has a tornado move that's, like, it looks like Sonic is going in a circle so fast it creates wind, whereas in this one it's, like, Okami style, he has the power of paint.
Yeah, the circle is how you create the tornado with his paintbrush.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that these are all subject to change, but these are from a build from last month, and the game is supposed to come out this year, so unless they delay it or they crunch to the point where somebody dies, then it's going to look pretty bad.
Yeah, it doesn't look... I genuinely do not understand how Sonic Team is, like, still a thing. And I mean, like, no shade on any of the people who work at Sega or at Sonic Team or on Sonic Things. Like, obviously there are examples of good Sonic things that have been made, even in sometimes recent times. But, like, every single, like, big, you know, new Sonic release is, like, its own brand of bad. And, like, sometimes it's funny bad, but a lot of times it's just not that fun bad. And it's so weird to me that, like, we have, like, we have a Tommy Wiseau of video games that keeps getting money. EA has killed way better developers than Sonic Team.
Yeah, they're not, they're, like, the worst Sega development team. I saw a great comment that was like, all these other teams at Sega, like, you know, the Phantasy Star team, the Yakuza team, they're like doing some of their best work. And meanwhile, Sonic Team goes to the roof with their binoculars to sneer at Nintendo from across the street.
But like Nintendo from 5 years back as well. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't. Making a video game is hard, but like making a competent video game, like it's... making a competent middling video game is not that difficult with what we have. Ubisoft has been doing it for the past 20 years, arguably.
It's like, okay, so we had Generations, which was great. We had Lost World, which was okay. Its best thing was the music. Platforming wasn't too bad. It wasn't the worst game. It was an okay middling game. And that's a pretty okay bar for Sonic. Then we had Boom. Then we had Forces. And now Frontier. Soon we're just going to get a third storybook series. give me Sonic War and Peace.
At this point,
was the best of times. It was the blue blur of times.
At this point, we're going to have, like, you know, Sonic Generations 2, and it's going to be Classic Sonic, Boost Sonic, and Sad Sonic.
Oh, you don't understand how much I want another Generations that's like Heroes Onward.
Oh, man.
Including levels from Shadow the Hedgehog this time, and then, like, yeah, Forces, Boom,
Attitude Era Sonic, hell yes.
Yeah, I just want, like, a highlight of the worst Sonic levels, but, like, put them in a good game.
Yeah. Gonna have the Shadow the Hedgehog level that takes 20 fucking minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
The maze level. Yeah, it's great.
So yeah, Sonic Forces, great video game.
Sonic Frontier?
Sonic Frontier, great video game. Definitely gonna buy it when it comes out. Thank you, Sonic Team, for giving the internet more content.
Next up on the news is the Zootomayo announcements.
Yes!
Zootomayo just had their fourth anniversary live stream, which we can no longer watch. But they had two pretty interesting announcements from that. The first one is the Zootomayo TCG.
I cannot tell you how excited I am. I am going to get a card pack of this, and it's going to be all in Japanese, and I'm not going to understand any of it. But hey, I don't understand anything of Vanguard either. Vanguard is that card game that has, like, a whole bunch of text on all of the cards, right? That has, like, 30 different keywords.
Oh, there's a bunch of games like that.
Okay,
you could
cool.
be saying Yu-Gi-Oh! You could be saying Future Card Buddy Fight. You could be saying Force of Will. You could be saying Y Schwartz. But Y Schwartz has Hololive characters, so who's Ooh. Really winning? So the announcement just said, like, Zootomayo competitive trading card game coming soon. They're looking for illustrators, I believe. Now, I think my thing is that I really hope this isn't a game based on booster packs, and I hope trading card game is a term for the genre and not the release model.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put it past them to release it as a game with booster packs, but that's just going to be harder to get into as somebody from another country. I doubt if they did that, they would translate it, because it's hard enough to release a trading card game with booster packs, but to do so in more than one market, especially one that is not as, like, popular, where, like, the property isn't as popular, you, like, rarely see it.
Yeah, I really hope that that just means that, like, it's the card game, but they're calling it the Zootomayo TCG.
Yeah, I hope it's just, like, it plays like a TCG, you know, 1v1 competitive game, you build a deck beforehand.
Yeah. That said, either way, absolutely going to import it, whether that's importing packs of it or importing the game.
Split a case.
But cracking open some card packs with the boys.
Yeah.
But how are we going to buy something from Japan and ship it here? Well, luckily, with today's sponsor...
This could be you.
Are you a company that wants to hire two white people from Missouri?
There's a lot. You have a lot of options.
But we're also options.
But only two have the unique cross intersection of Zootomayo and Morbius.
We're hot commodities.
Yeah. The strangest Venn diagrams you'll ever see. Yeah, no, I'm you know, very, just waiting kind of patiently. I'm interested in how the game actually plays, obviously, being a game player and game designer. I'm also really interested in what details we can garner from the game. Will we have official character names? Will we have, like, fun lore tidbits? Will there be flavor text? Will there be, you know, new characters made for the card game?
Yeah, like, we already have the choose your fighter section of, I think, the most recent music video, yeah, was like already sort of a confirmation that yes, we understand that we've created this this multiverse, even more so than obviously
Kansaite Kushiwa, that
one. The one where all the Neeras get murdered.
Mm-hmm. S plus tier. Multiverse reality buster.
And so, like, we you know, I really, really, really want to see what they do with this. Especially because, like, I know at the very least, like, Kung Fu Piggy, like, has continued to make essentially their own fan art of their characters.
Yeah.
From their two videos. And so, like, you know, are we going to get some more confirmation of, like, you know, Oni Girl, mm-hmm. or Maiden Nira. Like,
I want to see the antagonist, though.
Oh, yes, like, yes,
I want to,
yes.
I want to see the triangle, the deadly triangle. I want to see if the meteors that attacked the Nira Island were an alien force or not. I want to see the animator from Mirror Toon.
Yes. Oh, God.
So many fun little bits.
I want to see Akane's profile picture.
I want to see the two hands, specifically Handzilla.
Yes.
Which she fought in a Pokemon battle. And speaking of Kung Fu Piggy, that's the other Zootamayo announcement, is there's in the works a Zootamayo video game. It is a sprite-based 2D, like, action platformer game, with art direction done by Kung Fu Piggy, featuring Nanashi and Cat Nita, I believe.
Obviously quite excited. No idea. I mean, obviously, I assume you're probably going to stream it.
Yeah.
No idea if I'm going to get it.
I will say, so the trailer they showed was really in development. It didn't have, like, a complete level or anything. There were some, like, areas with completed sprite work, but most of it was more so a few mechanics, and then just a sort of confirmation that they're working on it. So it probably won't come out for at least a year,
yeah,
if not more.
This is like Alpha 0.2.
Yeah.
But still excited.
Mm-hmm.
Excited to see this small, obscure, million plus subscriber YouTube channel that we talked about.
Yeah.
Finally get some of the recognition it deserves.
Mm-hmm. There's one more piece of news I want to bring up, which was, it came from the Sony State of Play that happened recently, the Sony Direct, and that is Street Fighter VI, which we've known about for a while. They have a new logo, and it looks good this time. The old logo looked like they just looked up number 6 logo and, like, downloaded the first option. The first vector image they found.
It actually still had the stock photo's watermark on it when they showed it.
Yeah. But now the logo looks better. They showed actual gameplay footage. There's going to be a sort of story mode, it looks like, where you, like, run around a city and get into street fights.
Ooh.
There's, like, a little bit with a character climbing a ladder to find, like, an item or something. Don't know exactly how all that's gonna work. They showed off some of the new characters, they showed off the new models for Ryu and Chun-Li, it all looks good. It's much better than MVCI Chun-Li ever was.
Oh, yeah.
Which, yeah, that's the fun punching bag. I played MVCI, I can make fun of it. It wasn't a bad game to play, but that wasn't the problems with it.
Chun-Li is my uncle, so,
Well, Chun-Li's your uncle. Yeah. In Chun-Li, just picturing Rick Pawn Shop in Chun-Li working at the Pawn Stars Pawn Shop.
Now this Chun-Li is worth money, and I mean money.
That's not my tattoo set. Good, great, legendary YouTube poop. But one thing I really liked about it, so they've showed a bit of the new mechanics. It's really funny. So Granblue Versus announced a new mechanic being added to the game that's like a dash cancel and a button that lets you dash back out of block stun. And then in Street Fighter 6, they're like, meet our new mechanics. The like dash shift or whatever allows you to cancel any normal into a dash. There's also this move that lets you dash back out of a block stun for the cost of meter. And it's like, wow, they really did just come up with the same mechanic, didn't they?
How creative.
But I really love the art direction. There's been some talk about, like, you know, whether it's more realistic or anything. I think it's more so that the characters are just... I don't want to say matured. I mean, Ryu looks like an old man now. Or not an old man, but like, you know, in his like 70s or 60s. I don't know. But he looks older. I feel like it's a game where the sense of character design has matured, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
The costumes in the older games are very, like, simple, and that probably helped a lot for, like, the sprite drawers and stuff. But I think nowadays they're more realistic in the sense that they're things I could picture people wearing. Like, Ryu still has his gi and stuff like that, but Cammy has pants. And, I mean, I don't care about the Cammy, like, suit from before staying around or anything. That's the big one that Capital G gamers are getting upset with, but I think her new design looks cool.
It's, yeah.
They gave Zangief pants as well, which is great. I don't actually know if they gave Zangief pants, but it would be really funny if they did.
In Street Fighter 6, we're proud to announce everyone gets pants now.
Yeah, the only thing I hope they don't do clothing-wise is make sponsored clothing again.
Make sure to wear your Air Jordans so you can level up faster.
Yeah, wear your Red Bull outfit so you can unlock a new character, Tim.
Tim's win quote is, oh boy, I sure do love a Red Bull in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has a flight mechanic.
Shut up, you're not funny.
I know.
So, yeah, having not seen the new designs, can't comment.
The trailer had this cool, like, graffiti paint splash effect, which I'm really excited for. I really liked in Street Fighter 4 the, like, ink brush particle effects that happened with attacks. And this seems kind of like a more street art version, whereas that was more calligraphy. And so I'm pretty excited for that. Yeah. I love that aesthetic.
Yeah, Graffiti Punk is, like, literally top fucking... like three aesthetics for me. There's a reason that I really like the graffiti era of video games.
Yeah. There's a reason why I have that Splatoon shirt, even though I don't play Splatoon.
Exactly. And there's a reason that I play Splatoon, even though I don't have that Splatoon shirt. I think that's sort of the big news, unless you have anything else to say about Street Fighter 6.
Nope.
Cool. Let's get into just sort of, you know, things we've been playing recently. I started, and by that I mean literally I have played only about 4 hours, but I have started playing Payday 2 as a bit of an experiment. See, I own Payday 2, but I own basically none of the DLC that isn't free. I do own the Wolf Pack, but that's because you get it for Payday 1, and I feel like owning literally one of them is whatever. But I have not paid the $15 to get the, like, everything up until 2018 pack of DLC. I specifically set out to see, is this game good without spending more money? Here's what I've got. Number one, gameplay, moment-to-moment gameplay is very fun. I kind of expected this. Number two, I have a really big problem with this game. So, Payday 2 has a really bad UI, and to help mitigate that, they created a career mode, which basically holds your hand through a good couple of missions. You can, if you want, completely ignore it and just play any, like, play it as normal, basically. But career mode is specifically there to sort of help you, like, help tutorialize you a bit into getting into the game, and then also, like... you know, actually giving you a clear objective. So, Career mode starts at chapter one, obviously. It has one very obvious tutorial mission, and then, like, two, three, and four, like, different little missions that are their own, that are, I'm fairly certain, just, like, actual missions that the game has. And then there's the fifth part. I get to the fifth part, and it says, you need to own this DLC.
Oh.
Now, I will say to completely like shit on the game without giving it its just due. Number one, you can still play the game, like you can still play everything in the base game and in the free updates without owning that DLC. Number two, it specifically tells you you can now go online. Like, you know, it's the kind of game where if somebody owns the DLC in the party, then everybody can use it. And so it's like gives you the option, hey, go online for this. And so like it isn't entirely completely barring me from progress. However, I do feel like the fact that I am on step 5 of the career mode of this game, which is supposed to be like easing new players into the whole systems, having a giant red warning that says you need to own this DLC in order to play this, is fucked.
No, that is easing the new players into the system.
I mean, I guess you're not wrong. Like, I guess this is kind of just the problem with, like, games that have existed for, like, 10 years and have gotten consistent DLC updates. Like, this is the same thing problem with, like, Paradox games, you know, that are like, you know, yeah, Crusader Kings 2, it's great. How do you get into it? Well, the necessary DLCs are this, this, and this. These are all the ones that, you know, add gameplay features, but you don't necessarily need to own to have, the community hasn't considered, like, essential. And then all of this is, you know, all of the skin packs and stuff. Or Stellaris, I think, is, like, the biggest example, because they've at least gone to Crusader Kings 3. They have not gone to Stellaris 2. Stellaris is still just getting its own fucking updates.
I love the way Frontier does DLC for their Planet games. Because, like, Planet Zoo, it's like, you can buy the Africa pack, which has a hippopotamus, a rhinoceros, a lion, and three really cool sticks. And people are like, yo, sticks! Holy shit, that's what sticks in! We gotta get this.
Yo, that stick goes perfectly with my build of Mars!
Yeah.
They call me the hip-hopopotamus because I got a rhinoceros. Yeah, and so it's annoying. The moment-to-moment gameplay is pretty alright. And it's also the kind of game where, like, you have to sort of, inevitably, you kind of have to just look up on YouTube Payday 2 best builds free. Which, to be fair, there are, like, having a game that relies mostly on its community and sort of, like, Wikia culture, not literally in this instance, but, like, you know, a bunch of community members to guide new players through, will inevitably kind of have the problem where it's incredibly user-unfriendly because it requires that more or less.
Mm-hmm.
But that also means that there is a wealth of resources if you are a new player wanting to get into it.
Yeah, I think there's merit to the idea of like reactive design, which is when you're making a, this is a term I'm making up, I don't know if it's a real term, which is where like when you're making a thing that you're constantly updating, of designing around the community driven meta. Basically because, like, the players will play better than you can, and so they will find the strongest strategies. And then for a co-op game, you kind of have to make challenges that are harder than what they can do, or that are appropriate challenges for them. So you design specifically around the meta, because that's the highest level. And then the people who don't know the meta, or haven't learned the meta yet, have a much harder time than intended. But on the other hand, like, this is like a challenge mode.
Yeah.
You know, and the meta exists as a consequence of game mechanics. And so hypothetically, anybody could find out the meta strat or develop a new strat that's equally strong for your challenge content.
Yeah. It's,
but
it's,
at the same time, you do have to make sure there is on-ramping, which is why like a lot of games nowadays will have tutorials for meta game concepts beyond just mechanics. Like, fighting games have tutorials about doing and blocking mix-ups. Mix-ups are an outcome or a consequence of the rules, but they're important to know, and they're important for being like a baseline playable at a game.
Yeah, it's slightly mitigated with Payday specifically because it is a PvE mode. There is no PvP in it.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're not going to get in and like get completely crushed by somebody who has all the meta gear. You're just going to like at worst get in and not be that useful, to not kind of be a fourth wheel to a tricycle team.
Yeah. From what I've understand, this is like a problem that WoW has had forever.
Yeah.
Is with raid content, that people will get so good at raid content that they just have to keep power creeping it.
Yeah, that's again, kind of an outside of the community, so you know, this is only like from what I hear, but they specifically put out the like, here's everything up to 2018 as a sort of like, this is the final straw, we're not going to release anything new. And then they kept releasing new things because obviously this is how they make most of their money.
Mm-hmm.
And so like newer and newer packs obviously just keep creeping out, like, you know, this is now the most important one. The most recent pack has the first LMG you can aim down sights with, and it's just powercraft out basically any other LMG build.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like you inevitably are going to have these kinds of problems when you make this your whole deal as a company.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the other criticism I have, and like, this is less of a criticism, I guess, is just, it's the dissonance of Payday. Now, what do I mean by that? Okay, obviously you are playing, like, bad dudes TM. You're playing heisters, you're playing bank robbers, you're playing criminals. So, like, obviously, things like murder, who cares? You know, especially when it comes to video games, like, obviously, you just kind of have to accept various things. I subscribe 100% to the Ross Scott theory that every video game protagonist, more or less, is a sociopath, because you can't kill a bunch of people and then be a normal person at the end of the day. But it feels different to me when you posit the main enemies as, like, the police, that, like, people, like, these people can literally murder 1,000 police in one heist, and they aren't, like, the most wanted terrorists in the entire fucking world, you know?
Mm-hmm.
like it's just I understand there's a lot of things that I like accept with video games, and I just kind of push it out of my head. And you know what, when I push it out of my head, it's fine. I have a fun time. It's a fun video game. It's a fun horde shooter, and that's what it is. These aren't police officers and like SWAT team. These are hordes of enemies that I gun down. But it's still weird, right? Like, it's still, these people will literally murder a 4-digit number of officers in a day, and like the entire United States Army isn't, like, we haven't declared martial law. They're able to just live in New York in their hideout. These, like, no.
His sense of immersion broken, Galen goes to what he can only know how to do: complain about video games.
I can
excuse all the other inaccuracies, but not being a wanted criminal and dying, that's where I draw the line.
Yeah, it's
I can excuse a blue hedgehog that run fast.
But a shoot a police, that's where I draw the line. Yeah, it's
the thin blue line is just Sonic on a rail.
Fuck. Oh,
we've,
man,
hit our peak.
Yep. So yeah, that's Payday 2. Pretty alright game. I don't know. I still don't know if it's any good for new players. Like, I've had fun. I have had fun playing it completely solo with AI partners, even if my AI partners are stupid, and even if, like, the sort of core of the game, it feels a little predatory with just the sheer amount of DLC. But even with the base game, it seems like you can have a decent time. I haven't run against anything. I haven't run against, like, it becoming completely boring. So
next topic, I want to talk about platform fighters, and specifically Multiverses.
Yes.
I was lucky enough to get an invite key from a friend to play the Multiverses alpha. And just to get my thoughts out of the way, I had a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to the full release. There are some things I'm really unsure about, like the way the perk unlocking works. But overall, I enjoyed playing it. But so, I'm a big fan of platform fighters, which is sort of the preferred term for games like Smash Bros. The main components of a platform fighter are freeform movement, where movement is not tied strictly to the opponent in the way that most traditional fighters are, as well as a greater sense of momentum and smoothness than those games, a bit more control over how you move by yourself. Essentially, the movement of a platformer game with the fighting aspects of a fighting game. You know, choosing a character, beating up an opponent, etc. It doesn't necessarily have to have things like percentage or ringouts or stuff like that. It doesn't necessarily have to have DI. The main things are it is a fighting game with an emphasis on platforming and movement. I play a lot of Rivals. I just went to Combo Breaker mainly to play Rivals. I've played Slap City, I've played Rushdown Revolt, I've played Indie Pogo, a little bit of Slayers for Hire. Like, I've played a lot of plat fighters. For one thing, it's really unfortunate that people keep calling them Smashlight or Smash clones. It's kind of the point where, you know, people would say Doom clones instead of just first-person shooters. I hope eventually that we can get to the point where it's its own genre and not just Smash clones. It's wild, though, because, like, so people want games that are not Smash Bros, because if it's too close, they'll say, oh, they're just copying off Smash Bros. But, like, also just people will see sometimes the like, platforming movement and be like, oh, they're copying Smash Bros. Like, when Nick All-Stars was first teased, people were like, oh, so Nickelodeon's trying to do a Smash Bros, and they're just copying all of Smash Bros. Mechanics, when that's pretty far from the truth.
Yeah, it's using, at the very least I can speak up with NASBA, which is that, like, obviously it has the similarities of genre, but, like, the granular details, much like there's a massive difference between, like, a Doom game and a Quake game.
Yeah.
Like, there are massive differences between something like Smash Ultimate, Smash Brawl, Smash Melee even, and your NASBAs or your Rivals.
I'm like, how many platform fighters does it take before people think of it not as people copying Smash Bros, but as making a game in the genre? The other thing, though, is that, like, people really like to judge new games based on existing ones, which is true for everything, but it's really bad for platform fighters because people will judge it solely by Smash Bros. Like, they'll see that there's no blocking, and they're like, oh, well then, you're just gonna get beat up the whole time. Or, so Multiversus is meant to be 2v2, it's balanced around 2v2. And in doubles, in Smash and Rivals, and I believe Slap as well, I don't even know if Nick has or can do doubles, or if people play it, but in those games there's team attack, where you can hit your teammate. It means that it's risky to go in on the same opponent, because you could hit each other. But also it means you could, like, hit each other to help your recovery. You could, like, hit your teammate and then they can do another up special. And they don't have this in NASBA, and it's really frustrating to see people like, yo, they don't have team attack? That's broken. I'm not going to play this game because it's going to be bad. When I'm like, you're not judging it based on its own design.
Yeah, you're judging it based on if Sakurai Tomorrow was like, Smash is now entirely doubles, instead of, like, we've built this game from the ground up to be balanced around doubles.
Yeah, it's just kind of frustrating. As far as the gameplay goes, I think a lot of people call it floaty, and I don't think it's too floaty. I think I couldn't tell how much DI was helping. I don't know how much DI is a thing in that game. DI is when, like, in Smash Bros, you hold a direction when you're getting hit to adjust your knockback angle.
Directional influence is the non-anagrammed version.
Yeah. A lot of platform fighters have variants of this, but they don't need to have it. I think there's a lot of players of these games that really dislike it when there's no DI, but I could go either way. I mean, I'm used to traditional fighters as well, where there is no such thing. And Multiversus has other forms of, like, combo infinite prevention. Like, moves stale really quickly and hard, so, like, you can't just repeat the same move over and over, which actually leads to some kind of interesting decision-making. Movement feels fine to me. There's no wave dashing, but instead there's air dashing, and you move along the ground quick enough. The fact that, like, if you press jump and attack at the same time, you'll always do a lowest possible aerial instead of, like, doing a rising aerial took a lot of getting used to, whereas in other plat fighters, if you hold jump and press attack, you'll do one while you're going upwards. But I think once I got used to all those mechanics, it started to get really interesting. Every character has, like, Gatling combos where they can do a normal into a special. And so for some characters, you could do some pretty involved combos, like with Shaggy or Finn. The character selection is really weird.
Yeah, I kind of love the character
selection. I love it. That's the thing. I love the character selection. I'm really excited to see who else they add. But even right now, it's like you've got Shaggy and Velma from Scooby-Doo. You've got, like, you've got Arya Stark from Game of Thrones. You've got Harley Quinn, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman from DC. You have Taz and Bugs from Looney Tunes. You've got Tom and Jerry. They're a puppet character. And then you have Finn and Jake and Garnet and Steven.
I genuinely love it because, like, so, like, okay, the only criticism I will give is that it feels like they could dig into sort of, like, the weird, obscure Hanna-Barbera a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it feels really eclectic in the way that, like, Smash 1 was.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, it's not just a lot of, like, you know, obvious, simple, popular things. Like, even Nazba, some of the choices, not some of the choices, but, like, so a lot of the choices to me felt a little safe. It was very fun, but it was like, you know, these feel a little obvious. And then there were also some staggering exclusions. But this feels like a perfect sort of, like, spread of things. There's obviously you know, a little bit of overrepresentation of DC. As someone, this all, by the way, comes from the opinion of someone who has.
There's as many DC characters as there are Cartoon Network characters.
Yeah, but at the same time, all right, but at the same time, DC shares a shared universe. Which
okay, well, hold on now. Have you ever seen OKKO Cartoon Network Crossover Crisis? All of Cartoon Network shares the same universe.
Well, I guess we are also literally getting that confirmed by the weird super serious series.
Are you talking about Learning with Pibby or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. That one.
Oh my god, we forgot to mention Blood and Honey.
Blood and Honey?
Okay, did you know that Winnie the Pooh is in public domain now?
Yes.
Did you know that people are making a slasher movie with a fucked up Pooh and Piglet as the villains?
Yes! But
Piglet looks like fucking Liu Bei or whatever from Journey to the West. It's like this boar guy.
Oh, I love it.
And Pooh looks kind of like the like... janky, stanky, 3D Gangnam style Winnie the Pooh model mixed with a purge mask.
Ah, yes.
Anyways. Yes,
this is what the world needs. Mm-hmm. This will heal our nation.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
But no, yeah. Multiverses, character selection, I'm all for it. I love that they're really stretching, like, all their properties they can put in. The characters are very faithful. There's a lot of super inspired moveset choices. Like, Tom and Jerry being a puppet character, they do the thing where, Tom, all of their attacks is Tom trying to hurt Jerry in some way, like tying Jerry to a missile and then shooting the missile and you can control it. Bugs Bunny is a random item character where he reaches into an Acme box and pulls out an item. That's great. Velma collects clues, which builds up a super meter and she can call the cops on the opponent.
Yeah. So good.
Yeah, it's so good. And there's a lot of small things, like Steven has an Aegis reflector that he uses his shield to make, and he can also bubble people in a what is a subtle nod to Rano from Rivals of Aether. It's pretty great. I'm super excited to play it. I hope that, for one thing, tournaments either don't use perks or they have all perks unlocked, because there are equipable perks. You equip 4. 3 of them are pretty basic stat boosts or modifications, pretty small numbers. One of them is like a keystone perk that can pretty drastically affect the character. like Bugs Bunny goes from having this long charm move to having a trap that charms enemies if they hit it. Or like Tom changes from dropping one dynamite from his air down special to three. And so like a lot of those can be pretty important for a character. And I think that was the one problem I had with the alpha, was just that it felt like if you didn't have one of those keystones, you were at a disadvantage.
Yeah, I will say, as an outsider, that's honestly kind of the one, like, I do very much agree that, like, I don't know how you unlock them, but it should be, like, the easiest possible means of unlocking them.
Since they seem so, play the character.
Yeah, since they seem so, like, specifically, like, keystoned around them. Mm-hmm. But that's honestly one of the, like, most exciting things to me personally, is that perk system, because it feels like there's a lot of opportunity to, like, have one character play, like, just that little bit crunchier, like that little bit more different,
best,
you know?
Best Bugs Bunny builds 2022.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm a sucker for things where you build your team. I think there's a lot of games that do that, and it's sort of a shared property among of a lot of popular games. I will also say, so it has a battle pass for cosmetics, and I feel like for a free-to-play fighting game, I'm okay with that. Cosmetic battle pass. You know, how to make fighting games free to play has been sort of a question. Brawlhalla's done pretty good with it right now, but not many other fighting games have gone free to play. KI did, and it wasn't really picked up because it was free to play. It just wasn't super popular. It's kind of a game that's kind of tough to get into.
Wasn't that the one where you have to buy each individual character?
Yeah. You could also just buy it for the price of a normal fighting game and get everybody.
Yeah.
That's the same with Street Fighter V, actually.
That still feels wrong, but...
Yeah, but instead of having that style of, like, League of Legends unlocks, Multiversus just has cosmetics, and I'm like, it's whatever. But I'm really excited. I hope the one feature request I have is that I hope they have local online play, where you could, like, team up with somebody locally.
Yes.
You know, some of my favorite online gaming is specifically Halo Reach multiplayer, because you could have two people on the same system go online. So we would, like, go online and do Griffball and SWAT, and just having somebody next to you makes it, like, 50% better.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me 50% better, though. I'm horrible at Halo.
I am not terrible, honestly, because I've done the video game equivalent of doping, where because I would consistently play Halo or something like Fortnite Battle Royale, which, by the way, just ended its most recent season. That's all I have to say about that. I like Fortnite, unfortunately. No build mode is goated.
We like Fortnite.
Because I would consistently play with someone who's better than me, I would get opponents who are better than me, so that when I would go back to solo play, I would be better than everyone else.
Ah, yes. Practicing in a tough environment. Doping.
Yes. This is also actually how I got better than Matthew at Smash for a very brief amount of time, was at college, I had a bunch of friends who played Smash all the time, and they were far better at it than me, but then I was better than Matthew, and then Matthew started playing professional
professional for no money, and I never get out of pools, except once, this past time.
I think you're a professional fighting game player.
Aw, thanks.
Yeah.
So that's a professional fighting game player's thoughts on the Multiversus Alpha. I feel like we did that in the previous Talk Surfer show, but I don't remember.
I am honestly quite excited about it. Again, as the person who hasn't played it, I have been shown all of the characters by my co-host here, and honestly, it looks really fucking fun.
Maybe we'll do a co-op stream in July when it comes out in open beta.
Yeah, that would be real fun. Weirdly, Superman looks to be my favorite,
mm-hmm.
which is weird to me personally, because Superman as a character is always a very nothing character to me. I do not give a shit about him. I do not give a shit about superheroes. But they did a really interesting thing, which is that instead of him just kind of being all-powerful, he's really strong but really slow, and that's exactly my niche. I play Ganon. I main Ganon. And so, like, that's such an interesting take on him for me, and, oh, it looks good.
Yeah, he's like a grappler.
He looks so fucking fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm excited.
All right, we have time for one more topic.
I can talk briefly about RimWorld. I've recently put 40 hours into RimWorld.
You said RimWorld?
RimWorld. 40 hours. So, I've been playing RimWorld. I played, like, 40 hours of RimWorld over, like, 4 days.
Favorite Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah. So... On the spectrum of sandbox games, RimWorld is story-focused. I feel like sandbox games... This has almost certainly been, like, categorized by someone else, but I feel like there's, like, a, you know, triangle of sandbox games where it's, like, you've got creativity-focused, story-focused, and adventure-focused.
Story-focused not being the game's internal plot, but, like, an external sense of storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. Like... for example, RimWorld. RimWorld gives you 3 colonists, crash lands them on a hex that you choose, and says, there you go. And all the colonists have really random traits like psychopath, or nudist, or bisexual. And so you have to just kind of, like,
yeah, but deal what about the other 2 colonists?
Good. So yeah, it's a lot of emergent storytelling, and it's a lot of, like, you know, harsh environment storytelling as well. It can run up against some of those, like, little, like, you know, grab at your shirt collar moments, like when a literal manic human comes in and you have to tame them like an animal. But number one, I feel like it doesn't have anything that's, like, problematic past, say, like, essentially the kind of core problematicism of, like, any sandbox game. Basically just Control-C, Control-V, Folding Ideas is I did a colonialism in Minecraft video here. Over just, like, you know, all of them kind of have the core idea of taming the wilderness and things like that. And so, like, you're going to just emergently get some of those problems. And number two, it also posits itself as, like, you know, a sci-fi post-everything story. And so any, like, emergent storytelling about your ideologies and stuff is nothing based in reality. So you're going to have, you know, you're not going to have Nazis. You're going to have, like, a tribe of pirate cannibals. You're going to have transhumanists who think the flesh is too weak and want to replace their body. You're going to have hippies who think that doing opium is...
Look, I've already replaced part of my body.
Technically speaking, you are a transhumanist.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, it runs up against the problems that basically any other sandbox game does, but it also sort of, like, toys around with them with a wink and a nudge that... like, doesn't completely get rid of any icky feelings, but, like, makes it so that you can't sit there. You have to try really hard to get offended at RimWorld, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun emergent storytelling system, and it's not even, like, this isn't meant to be taken seriously as an excuse to ignore icky aspects. It's literal, this is not meant to be taken seriously, go nuts.
Mm-hmm. It helps that it's in the future and there's not really references to real life events, as opposed to something like Crusader Kings.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is sort of another storytelling game about finding extrinsic narratives from a system. But yeah, that one is baked and steeped in real life conflict from the past.
Yeah, like,
whereas this is, like, you have to worry about cannibals, or, like, a weird beast shows up and eat all your farm things, or, like, you smoke a little too much space weed.
Yeah, you do a little too much yayo and suddenly your only builder is fucking coked out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Crusader Kings is a really good reference point, honestly, of, like, the it has the funny emergent storytelling, but like in Crusader Kings 3, they specifically kind of like downplayed some of the more aspects that got latched onto by the wrong people.
Yeah.
By the kind of people who
you
say,
really have to do with historical games.
Yes.
I'm looking at you, Mordhau developers.
Yes. Honestly, I'm also looking at you, like, fucking... I'm kind of still looking at you, Paradox, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there's the storytelling games are, you know, their own brand. There's the, like, adventure games, which is more like your Terrarias, or your Starbounds, more or less, where, like, building is an aspect, and even sometimes storytelling is a bit of an aspect, but... it's more about the adventure that you as a person go on.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really like role playing a character or anything in something like Terraria. You are an adventurer getting the coolest, best gear to fight the Eye of God.
I feel like Terraria is like a Metroidvania with no walls, in that you could technically kind of build your way through any area. But it has distinct areas with distinct enemies, goals, and bosses. It has distinct upgrades you get from those areas. And it has a progression in mind.
Yeah.
It is also a game with building and surviving and crafting and stuff. But it's more about exploring the world.
Yeah.
It is just that the sandbox style is sort of the means with which you interact with that world.
Yeah. And it's really, it's genuinely really interesting to kind of like having seen it come to fruition from that. Because like... I remember when Terraria, like, kind of first came out and was essentially just seen like, yo, it's 2D Minecraft, insert soy face pointing here. It became way, way more than that. Like, it became massively its own identity in a way that, like, Starbound, which I wanted to like more, did not. Starbound...
And then it turned out that the devs didn't pay people who worked for Starbound, so...
Yeah. Oh, God, was Starbound Chucklefish?
Yeah.
Oh no, fuck.
Don't judge all your stuff based on that. Look into the details. I don't remember all the specifics.
Yeah.
So I don't know who you should cancel.
I'm not going to buy Starbound again, I guess.
Yeah.
I bought it way when it was way, way early. And honestly, like, don't get Starbound, get Terraria and like somehow mod it to be
Calamity
Space
Mod.
Yeah.
All I know about Terraria in recent history is just Calamity Mod's really good and has a really fucking good soundtrack. Thanks, DM Dokuro.
Oh, yeah, no. Terraria, like, I don't know about the Calamity Mod, but God, Terraria itself has a really fucking good soundtrack as well.
Oh, yeah, I know. I love that song that goes do 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 do
boom 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 boom. Bang.
Yeah, that one. It's like the main theme or something.
Yeah.
It's good.
And then you have creativity focus. And I was going to say Minecraft. I think I just said Minecraft. I feel like Minecraft is a little bit more, like, into the... Like, Minecraft is not the tip of this. The tip of this is something like Lego Builder. The Lego Building Program.
I mean, Legos really are the big sand... It's a literal sandbox.
Yeah.
Is the creativity focus. The beach.
Yeah. But Minecraft... I think, like, you know, like, beta Minecraft was this. But it kind of, like... You know, as it got more and more updates, it shifted a little more into the adventure aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But you can certainly play it in essentially any way you want.
Yeah. Especially nowadays, after, like, some of the recent updates, like the Caves and Caverns update, or the one that added, like, the witches and library witches, the big library structures. As they've added more, like, notable structures and biomes, I think it's become more adventure-focused.
Yeah. It's... Like, it's much more adventure-focused, but it still it keeps a lot of the core. It's much closer to the sandbox core, to the creativity core, than the adventure core. But it's still, like, notably not at the tip of the creativity core. God damn it.
Yeah. See, I don't play a lot of sandbox games, but I do like management sims. And I feel like a lot of my favorite management sims are the creative-type ones. Like, you know, Planet Coaster... Planet Zoo, even though those take a lot of effort, and it's kind of effort I'm not really prepared for. One of my favorite games in this genre is Parkitect, which kind of introduces some more management mechanics into the RCT2-1 style of gameplay. But I also feel like they're very similar in that a lot of these story-based survival games are kind of management sims. Like, RimWorld has some elements of that.
Yeah.
And then Dwarf Fortress is the big one.
Yeah, Dwarf Fortress is certainly the big one. Dwarf Fortress probably is the tip of that, honestly.
Yeah, I'm probably going to try that when it comes out on Steam.
Yeah, God, I would love to play Dwarf Fortress. Unfortunately, I've tried to play Liberal Crime Squad, which is made by the same guy, and I cannot get past ASCII art styles.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, they have, like, graphics packs for Dwarf Fortress you can download, but there's just nothing official yet.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think, like, Factorio is sort of also within that. Wait, no. Hang on.
Factorio is like a science game.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, hang on.
It's not necessarily one about building your own adventure, or about playing through the game's adventure, or about creating for the sake of art, but it's creating for the sake of science.
It's, yeah.
It's the fourth, you just extended the base of the triangle.
It's a pyramid now, because
it's a diamond.
It's the efficiency simulator. See, also Satisfactory.
And I think a lot of Minecraft early on was also this, after the, like, piston update, the redstone update.
Yeah.
It became a science game. Even before then, you had things like minecart boosters and boat highways and elevators.
And some of the most popular mods are things that just, like, essentially turn it into Satisfactory.
Or Factorio, yeah. I call them science games because it's about, like, figuring out optimal setups of machines based on learning mechanics, and you learn the mechanics through, like, scientific process.
Yeah.
Engineering simulators, maybe?
Yeah. Management, honestly, like, I didn't think I was into management simulators until I started playing city simulators.
Mm-hmm.
City Skylines, obviously, is kind of a, like, big accepted current one. And it's very fucking good.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a nerd. Oh, God. But hey, I could probably run a better city than... this is the space where, you know, just, like, whatever time it currently is, insert your current mayor here.
Good one.
Am I right?
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. I did just remember, though, there was one more thing I wanted to talk about super quickly.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
not on the list of topics we've made.
Oh, we're not talking about Milana likes?
No, that can hold on for later.
Yeah,
maybe
yeah.
We'll talk about it when we do Tunic.
Oh, God, yes.
No, I want to talk about A Dance of Fire and Ice Neo Cosmos.
Yes.
So, A Dance of Fire and Ice is a rhythm game where you've got two circles that rotate around one another, and you tap keys along with the beat to move them around, like, a grid or a track, sort of. Each track has a space, kind of like an old board game track. And you have to hit the key when they overlap with the next space, so they move along it. It's a little hard to explain, but that's sort of the best way to put it. Think of it like 2 feet, and you tap a key whenever the feet walk on a tile.
Yeah.
Now, they just released a DLC called Neo Cosmos, which adds a few new mechanics like holds and triplets, where you have 3 orbs instead of 2. But my favorite thing is it is developed primarily directed by Taro Nuke, who is a Stepmania ITG mod chart creator. And mod charts in ITG are probably like a whole other episode we could do. They're like, it's not just playing DDR. It is playing DDR, but there's like something happening that makes it harder to read. And so it's not just about doing motions like spins or walks or whatever it's called, or brackets. It's also about how can you read the information and, you know, use that to sight read. There'll be like, you know, it'll be upside down, it'll flip around, it'll flicker in and out. The arrows will move around, so you have to like press them in certain spots. But something that Taro kind of innovated in a lot of ways was the boss fight style, where there is a character who is affecting the arrows or the chart. And so the effects that happen to the chart are representative of the character and of the environment they're in. So like it's a snowboarder. This was from, I think, Mods Bootcamp 3, the one that was ran at AGDQ by Spooty Biscuit. was like a snowboarder where there's like snowy sort of fog that falls as they're snowboarding along a mountain, and that obscures some of the arrows, but then the arrows appear in like the trail the snowboard leaves on the snow. Or a character with like spider powers, and the arrows move along like a spider web string, and the string kind of vibrates a little bit.
Yeah.
From the weight of the arrows. Stuff like that, where it's like a boss fight where a character has like super moves, and the super moves represent the character in some abstract way.
Yeah. If you need an example that's a little more like literal, Taro has made charts for various Undertale bosses. For example, he made one for Muffet where he literally programmed in a section where you have to essentially do the Muffet fight.
Yeah.
Where you have to switch between the purple lines.
Yeah. And so Taro was hired to do this DLC, basically. So it has original characters that were made by the team, designed by... I don't know if Taro designed all of them, but designed by him and the others. New music, writing in a storyline that's kind of there. But the charts are great. It does a mix of like traditional A Dance of Fire and Ice stuff with the new mechanics added. But also it has some like visual flair type stuff. It has some mini games. There is one of the final like charts involves walking along a grid to dodge like laser blasts and spike balls, which has this really cool feeling of like doing an actual boss fight in a video game. But my favorite thing is the Mawaru, which is a WarioWare type thing that Taro does in every rhythm game. He's done it, I think, around 12 times now. He's done it once in every UK sight reading tournament, which is like a pack of mod charts. And the idea is it's just like it alternates between basic gameplay and like WarioWare, like for do something different for 5 to 10 seconds, which can either be specific types of patterns or difficult patterns, or it can be mini games. So like in ITG, he's programmed Baba Is You in little platforming segments.
Holy shit.
In ITG's engine, between like patterns that require you to do brackets and stuff and spins. And then in Adofy, this took the form of like a math quiz and a you have to like defend a castle from meteors. And it plays a little bit more like Bit Trip Core, maybe. And there's like trying to think, one of the other, oh yeah, there was also just a move around a grid to collect coins minigame. And then all this was between other sections where there was like harder patterns and stuff. And what I really like about these, other than like, so they're catchy, they're cool, they're fun and interesting because you get a lot of different styles in one song. They have a lot of like, it does the thing where every mini game, quote unquote, has its own music. So it'll be like a jingle to represent the song as a whole. And then like, it goes like 1, 2, 3, and then it starts the mini game, and then that has its own theme. And then when it's done, it's like, it goes back into the main theme. Like WarioWare.
Yeah. You know WarioWare.
Yeah. But it's also really funny a lot of the time. And I think it's hard to really explain how it can be funny in a rhythm game. It's not just that there are weird patterns, but there's a lot of small details, like how there is a part that says, remember this? And it's like, you go through a pattern and then you go through backwards, but it's invisible. But also there's like this little cat character who's appeared in other projects by Taro, who's holding an arrow that's pointing up or down. And that arrow is the direction all the math problems go. And so like I realized like halfway through the song, like, wait a minute, all these math problems have been going the same direction. Is the next one also going to go down? And then I remembered that the cat character was holding a down arrow, and I'm like, oh my God,
I solved it.
Yeah. There's a great sense of pacing as well. Even when you fail a pattern, a lot of times there'll be something funny that happens. Like, if you fail the castle defense, the little, like, chibi princess character that's in there just kind of spins away as if there was no real difference to her artwork. It's just, like, a spin effect. Yeah, it's great. Great, great catchy music. Again, shoutouts to DM Dokuro. Great value.
Yeah. Shoutouts to giving really talented creators their just due.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he has credits in a real rhythm game now. I think he actually did something for Pump It Up, for one of the iterations of Pump It Up.
Ooh.
He did a Mawaru for Pump It Up. But yeah, it's always really cool to see his stuff. I'm a big fan of his. That's why I played the DLC, and it's great. Also, all the characters, they never use gendered pronouns, so their genders are whatever you had canon them to be.
Nice.
Which is pretty freaking sweet.
Yeah, happy Pride Month, by the way.
Happy, it's okay to be gay month.
happy have a gay old time month is my favorite go-to phrase.
Have fun being sold rainbow things and then your existence being forgotten about. But it's okay, we won't forget about you.
Yeah.
As long as you don't forget about me. Don't you forget about different people on the gender and binary spectrum. Because gender isn't a binary at all. Don't you forget about people of different sexual orientations that are different from yours.
So,
yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. Whether you are gay or otherwise.
All those other letters.
Yeah. Whether you're lettuce, gay bacon, or tomato.
Let's go blues time? I was like, around the time the Blues were in the Stanley Cups, I kept seeing LGB and I was like, oh shit, do we have turfs in here now?
Ligma. Gotcha, bitch. you can find us. And
Lingdom,
yell at us.
Genus, bilum, tortoise. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry, that's enough. That's enough of that.
Let's get bound to Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yep, which is to defeat Disney.
You can find us at NetSurferPro on Twitter, on Facebook, on most social platforms.
Mm-hmm. Those two specifically.
You can you can listen to this podcast on basically anywhere you get your podcasts, including the app you're currently listening to us.
Wow. Imagine that.
You can also follow...
you can also give us a review on those podcast platforms.
That's the one.
Give us a comment, a review... Let us know how we're doing. Let us know if you have any suggestions. I swear our next episode is going to be a real episode.
Yes. Sorry about all the delays, times, you know how they are.
Yeah, I'm still going through some personal stuff, so let's leave it at that.
Yeah. You can find Matthew here, by the way, at twitch.tv/twack. That's twitch.tv/twak. You can also find them on Twitter at MattCredGaming.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find them on YouTube at IEatAtSonic.
Yes.
They have been streaming quite a bit. Most recently, I believe they've been streaming... Oh, God.
Just streamed yesterday.
Yeah, we just
Portal
streamed
2.
Yesterday. But I was trying to remember what was before that, before
oh,
I said and
Team
also...
Fight Tactics and Sonic Mania.
Okay. And yes, we just recently streamed Portal 2.
Portal 2 co-op, which I had never played through all the way.
And I had played through all the way, but it was years. What are other socials that you have? I think that's it.
That's about it. You can find all my other stuff through my Twitter, where I have a link tree. So if you want to see, like, my music or anything like that, you could check that out. And you can find Galen at Machine Gun Vampire on Twitch, where he probably might not stream. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Maybe when he gets a room to himself for a computer.
Yeah, that should actually be sooner rather than later. So.
He's schmooving.
Yeah, I am schmooving.
Yeah. You can also find him on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube. which is probably not true. It's quite a bold claim to make, if I might interject. If I might be so bold.
I literally Googled it, and I'm fairly certain there's, like, two or three others, but, you know, none of them have over, like, you know, like, 10,000 subs, so are they really true Galens?
Yeah. And, my advice for this week is read Akane Banashi. It's the best thing in Weekly Shonen Jump right now.
Yeah. You forgot my Twitter, which is at Galen Wilson. That's GALENWLS0N.
Yeah.
Where I post my hot takes, and that's also my TikTok.
And then you can follow him, and then you can read Akane Banashi, which is the best thing in Weekly Shonen Jump currently.
Yep. Oh my god. I just realized. I called an initialism an acronym. Oh no!